Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor John Clayton as we do every day at this time. You guys have questions for John, you can text those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So I was looking at the ESPN Power Rankings. They've got Seattle number one, which surprised me. And what's interesting, I'm sure you've already looked at it, but they give a little blurb is written about each team, and it'll say biggest weakness for each team. And for the Seahawks, obviously, it says the defense. Green Bay's number two, it says injuries is their biggest weakness. You scroll all the way down to the very bottom, dead last in the power rankings. The New York Jets, their weakness, John? Football.
I like it. Very accurate.
That pretty much sums it up, right? Le'Veon Bell is out. They let him go. And I think that came shortly after we talked yesterday because I was talking about the fact they were trying to trade him and asking you what kind of market is there going to be for a malcontent who makes a lot of money but has little production these days. So we looked at an article written by Bill Barnwell, who laid out a bunch of possible landing spots, one of which included Seattle.
Oh, please.
And I'm thinking, did he bump his head before he wrote this? What was he talking about?
I know. It's crazy. Bill, what are you not thinking on this? Because he's one of the sharpest guys in the business. And to throw Seattle out there is ridiculous because, again, it's like, you know, they certainly have, you know, some injury situations they're recovering from, but they've got plenty of backs. And why would you want to bring in a malcontent like Le'Veon Bell? It's the same thing as Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
So where does he land, do you think?
I think Chicago, because you look, their running game is terrible. You know, they've got very little talent in the backfield. Tarik Cohen is out for the season. So you throw all that together, and you have to think that's the most viable candidate to try to bring him in. Because, again, they're 4-1, but, you know, they're not playing like a team that's 4-1. They just happen to have a 4-1 record and been able to get lucky in a few games. But if you're going to be getting lucky, why not try to double down and try to get more talent? Because at least in a Matt Nagy offense, you know, you can Le'Veon can catch the ball. He can run the ball. He can do a lot of things. So to me, I think that's the team I would strongly consider.
Bob asked me a good question, John, and I'll have to have you fill in the names. But the choices were, you know, a guy that's either coming off of, you know, a pup list or IR or whatever that can most help this team or, you know, get signed. And I thought of all the choices, you know, I thought Josh
Gordon
would be the guy probably.
Oh, yeah. I would agree.
But also on the list, there's what? Darrell Taylor. You're talking about Rashad Penny.
We took Adams out of the mix because obviously he'll have an impact. So
right.
Everybody else.
Snacks Harrison, Jordan Brooks. What do you think?
The most important one would be Darrell Taylor because, again, you want to try to have as much pass rush as you possibly can just in case of injuries. Again, it's done a little bit better. But, again, when team needs are more on defense and the defensive line, and they addressed it with Damon Snacks Harrison, and now I think that you can see that you know they should be in good shape if they can, you know, get something going with one of the other defensive ends, or if they need to, you know, pick up another guy. I'm kind of like Camille Correa. I think he could be an intriguing guy if he gets cut, and will get cut if he can't get traded by the Tennessee Titans, because again, he's a, you know, quick twitch guy who can rush the passer, and he'll come in obviously very cheap because in free agency, the best he was able to do was re-sign at $1.25 million. So, and that could be one. I don't know if it's a waiver claim or whatever it is, but I think he could help out.
John, texts are coming in. We'll get to some of those questions coming up. But as far as Josh Gordon, somebody did ask, and we get that every single day. They're saying, do you think he'll even be back this year? I saw him tweeting out, hey, no news, you know, basically kind of keeping everybody up there. Nothing to tell you guys yet. Sorry. I mean, this is dragging on.
Yes.
So, I mean, what do you think the reality is? That it's half the season that he misses the first eight and gets to play the final eight? Or what can we realistically expect
now? Whatever I say would just be words. because it's like there's no formal answer. They've shut down any type of thought getting out on getting Josh Gordon back. Nobody has a clue. And so, you know, you just have to take it week by week to see at some point if they address the issue. But right now, they're not addressing the issue. At least I give Josh Gordon credit for at least, you know, kind of keeping everybody updated on the non-news. But, you know, at some point you have to think they're going to lift it because, you know, why would you let him sit out for a year unless he's had positive tests?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Correa, and I'm not sure if this is official.
Yeah.
That was traded to the Jags, but I'm not sure if that's.
Oh, okay. I did not hear that. I know that what they did tell him, because what ended up happening, you know, he had COVID-19, and then you know, they put him on the active roster the other day, and then they didn't play him. And of course, I mean, you can understand. He was pretty much the third linebacker and like the third pass rusher. And then all of a sudden they bring in Jadeveon Clowney and Vic Beasley. And so he's kind of nowhere. And so you can see, not that, you know, he's being mean or anything like that, saying, hey, I can see I've lost my way on this team. Can you put me someplace else? And so when he was inactive yesterday, they basically fessed up to him and said, okay, fine, we'll let you go. And, you know, Jacksonville doesn't have much as far as any defensive talent. So I think he can help out. He could help out here, I think, too. But, you know, sounds like if it's going to be Jacksonville, it'll be Jacksonville.
But, John, nobody wants to be in Jacksonville.
That's
true. Seems. But, you know, he's just looking, like you said, for a chance, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, what you're looking at, he's, you know, on a one-year deal. He needs to build up something on his resume to try to get something. And it's not like he's going to – let's put it this way. If you're going to be inactive behind Vic Beasley, Harold Landry, and Jadeveon Clowney, it's like your chances of getting on the field are nil.
The Buffalo Bills got worked yesterday, and you had some people saying, well, maybe they're not what we thought, or they're not as good. I mean, they didn't look great, certainly. The Titans had their way with them, but I don't think less of the Bills. I don't think, oh, we were off the mark in all of the praise they were receiving. How do you feel about that?
I agree, because, again, you know, the way they went the first four games, and arguably there was a lot of easiness to the schedule except for that Ram game. So you can see there's something there, because Josh Gordon was fantastic. I mean, you know, he was the
offensive. Josh Allen.
I mean, Josh Allen was fantastic. I mean, he was the offensive player of the month in the AFC, and he was putting up great numbers. And so, you know, he came back to being a little more human in this game. And so, and again, the surprising part was, you know, I thought Tennessee had so many problems. No practice in 2 weeks, and what, a 90-second walkthrough the other day, not being in the building. You know, they still had four starters out on COVID-19, and all of a sudden they just come over and smoke the Bills. But, you know, I guess the Bills are coming back to reality, because it could get worse this weekend because they play Kansas City. So they can't. I think they realize, hey, let's not be too full of ourselves here. We better make sure that we fix some things up and then not make the turnovers. As Dave Wyman was saying earlier today, you know, you lose the turnover value, you lose the game, and the Bills lost the turnover battle.
All right, John, you know I wouldn't ask you a fantasy question, so I'll just put it in a different way.
But,
well, you know, we were just talking about Ryan Tannehill. What, 21 for 28 last night, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. What an amazing transformation. Their question was, should I take Roethlisberger or Tannehill? But still, I mean, I think Tannehill, it's a pretty amazing story, because he seemed to be the wrong franchise quarterback in Miami.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. But who was the head coach? Adam Gase. is he doing better with the
how can it be, like, we're talking about this, it seems like everybody around the league is talking about this across the country, and yet he still,
I know,
has a job
and has the power to make the team less talented, by the way. You know, to the Jets, you know how many guys on the active roster of 53 have been to the Pro Bowl? And the answer is 37-year-old Frank Gore. He's the only one. I mean, there's nothing on defense. I mean, C.J. Mosley opted out this year. The linebacker's making $17 million a year. They traded Jamal Adams. They, you know, let Le'Veon Bell go. So the only Pro Bowl player who has been to the Pro Bowl is Frank Gore. But, yeah, but what's an amazing stat that I saw today is that if you take the 16 starts that Ryan Tannehill has had, you know who he compares to? Patrick Mahomes. They basically have the same numbers over the last 16 games that they played.
No kidding.
Wow.
I mean, which is amazing, but I mean, it shows you, of course, you know, he was, what, a 2012 draft choice in the Russell Wilson draft and also Nick Foles draft and Andrew Luck draft. But, you know, they thought he was going to be better, but look at how he's been able to bounce back.
Who's what? Was it the wife of a Dolphins player that was ripping him? Brett Grimes.
Nico Grimes, yeah.
Yeah, was ripping him, and, like, he was the problem there. And, yeah, that's working. That's aging well.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this question from the 360. John, Patrick Queen just won Defensive Player of the Week with 9 tackles, 1 sack, 1 forced fumble, 2 fumble recoveries, and a fumble return for a touchdown. We skipped him for Brooks. What are your thoughts?
He was too small for what they want for this defense. And, you know, they wanted Brooks. I mean, Brooks is explosive. And because, you know, it's the same thing that I thought that New Orleans would be going for him. But, you know, in the eyes of Sean Payton, because he looks through the eyes of Bill Parcells, you know, I want a 250, not a 225. And so it's not like this team wants big linebackers. But, you know, they in Brooks, this was the guy that they wanted. And this is the guy who looks very good because, again, what he looks like, and you've seen his profile on the field, he acts and runs and plays like Bobby Wagner, where, you know, Queen is going to be the quick guy. Can he be overpowered? But you knew he was going to be a good one, and he is a good one. But, again, you know, it's, you know, pick one or the other, but both are going to be good.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I always wonder, like, everybody's on a different journey. You know, some players, and go back to, you know, my rookie year, Brian Bosworth was a good rookie. He played well. He had
Lead the team in tackles that year?
I'm not sure if he was the leader. It was him and Fred Young. So it might have been Freddie with 2 Ds. But, you know, he just was a player that was able to do that. I was not. And so, you know, everybody's on a different journey. And, yeah, I'm watching this kid just kill it with the Ravens. But, you know, 3 years from now, let's see.
But remember, it's a completely different scheme. And I know in the old days, back when you were playing, is that you know, they want 3-4 guys like Bill Parcells wanted them. They got to be 250 or more, right? They got to be big. We want big. Well, right now, quickness is such an important part of the game. And it really kind of started, Mike Tomlin started doing this, is that, you know, you take a good, quick linebacker in a 3-4 defense and you play him on the inside, which is what they're doing with Patrick. And so, you know, because then, you know, if you have some good blocking with good play on the defensive tackle spot, and then, you know, Murray can just kind of run around and get around people. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's a good enough player. He can translate well into a 4-3 or a 3-4, but I think he's that kind of that ideal guy in that 3-4 defense to play inside linebacker.
John, again, you guys can text in questions 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer. Text line 206 asking, Professor Clowney has looked very average. Do you think the Hawks were smart to pass on him?
Well, they didn't pass on him. He passed on them because he kept on not returning phone calls and, you know, not responding and giving counter offers. I still go with what my eyes saw last year. And the eye saw a lot of good things. And I know the numbers aren't translating right now. In a lot of ways, numbers aren't translating for a lot of defensive players. But, you know, this team is still undefeated. You know, he doesn't have many sacks, but then he didn't have many sacks last year. He's just not a sack guy. But I know in the first 2 games, he was among the league leaders in pressures, kind of like he did last year. And so I think that people are bitter that he's not here. People may be angry at the Seahawks for not bringing him back, but they tried. It just wasn't in the cards.
John, I don't know if you have any insight into this, but you and I talked earlier about Michael Kendricks. And when Cody Barton came up, you know, I said this a few weeks ago. Yeah, Michael Kendricks right now is a better linebacker if he comes back to play. But, you know, somebody asking about him, of course, we've got the weekly. I won't ask you about Josh Gordon anymore. But
thank you.
Yeah, but, you know, you got Clay Matthews. But what do we know about Michael Kendricks? Because I think I loved Michael Kendricks. Yeah. I thought he was great here. And, you know, I feel like, yeah, if he's able to be healthy and they can just plug him right in, he can help this defense.
Well, see, and I understand that the way things go right now, it's, you know, with the changing protocol and everything else, it's now more difficult to get players in for an immediate impact. And so, for example, you know, now and this came down late last week, you know, for any player that you bring in, even if you trade for him or you claim him on waivers, he's going to be on a 5-day or 6-day wait because he has to, now, instead of the 3 days or 4 days, he has to go through 5 days of COVID testing, you know, 2 tests in 5 days. And if you get the double negatives, then you can come out and you can put him in the building by the 6th day. So when you're looking at guys like Kendricks or Damon Snacks Harrison, you know, what you're doing is you're looking for a week ahead, not now. And so, you know, that means there's no urgency. at the moment. And, of course, you have other spots in the practice squad that you want to take care of and watch vociferously and all that stuff. And so, you know, he was, you know, the getting Damon Harrison was important. And, of course, it still is not out of the question that they'll bring Kendricks back in. He's only had, I think, one visit since he came to Seattle. And so I think you have to see where the knee is, and that's what we don't know, where he is with the knee.
By the way, did you see that stiff arm last night from Derrick Henry?
Phenomenal.
I mean, Josh Norman just landed.
Was that a stiff arm or just a
Kind of a throwdown?
Slammed him.
It was beautiful.
Well, I mean, the way it looked is that it's like almost like that stiff arm. He grabbed the helmet and then just threw him away. I mean, because it was more than a stiff arm. Because again, I mean, what was the only thing stiff was how the player reacted. Because I mean, he just got destroyed.
It was like a little kid. It was like a little kid.
You know, a cornerback who is feisty and has been to the Pro Bowl, and Josh Norman looked normal. I mean, did not look normal. It was an amazing one. I don't think I've seen one that good.
And I liked Henry's response after the game when he was asked about it, and he said, "I guess I've been doing too many curls."
Yeah.
He's just too strong. It was awesome.
But though, boy, the Titans did look good.
Yeah, they did. They look really well coached. Yeah, so. Hey, what do we know about Christian McCaffrey? I mean, they signed him to a big deal there. He's on IR, right?
Yeah, he still is.
And you don't think this week?
No, not at
two
all.
2 weeks?
No. It was 4-6, and so this will be, they won three games without him. So I still think it's probably going to be another 2 weeks.
That's right. You said that yesterday. So they went 0-2 with him.
0-2 with him.
3-0 without.
Uh-huh.
And Teddy Bridgewater kind of taken over there. Maybe it's Teddy's team, not Christian McCaffrey's team.
No, I still think it's Christian McCaffrey. Oh, let's put it this way. It's Matt Rhule's team. And right now, Matt Rhule's. I mean, he looks like he's going to be a really good coach. Because, you know, they weren't even supposed to. I mean, they were supposed to be a top 10 team in next year's draft. And, you know, they knew they were going to be good on offense, but they also knew they were going to be bad on defense because they basically broke the entire defense down and have now one of the youngest defenses in the National Football League. But boy, they're playing good football. Are they a playoff team? No. But I'm telling you right now, next year, particularly with their cap situation being good, the chance that they can load up more on defense, that's a playoff team in 2021.
Hey, if the Jets end up with the number one overall pick, do you see them going after Trevor Lawrence even though they've got Sam Darnold?
They have no choice. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, you know, at least on paper, is the best quarterback to come into the league since Andrew Luck in 2012. Because he looks that good. And if you watch them so far in this season, he looks even better. And so, Trevor Lawrence is locked as the number one pick. And right now, Darnold's a mess. He's gotten worse, not better. And so you'd have to think that, you know, they'd trade him and get some value for him. But no, they'd have no choice to have anybody but Trevor Lawrence on their team. And because, again, he's just that good.
I'm not sure we talked with you about this, John, but yesterday we did a little segment about the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes. I mean, number five offense, 403 yards, but the amazing thing is their defense.
I know.
And you were talking about this in the beginning of the year, not a lot of recognizable names, but still, I mean, Jalen Ramsey, they're number two against the pass, 198 yards they're giving up, number four
yards. They have 20 sacks.
Wow.
20.
Well, and we know who has a
seven
third.
Seven and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be Aaron Donald.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, I never thought that after they traded away all of those first-round picks and everything and no Todd Gurley. By the way, Todd Gurley has like the fourth most run attempts in the NFL right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so much for the knee thing anyway. So
yeah, but here's one
see
thing
he looks
to
like
remember.
At the end of the season.
And
yeah.
This is, of course, for the you know, the Seahawks fans that are worried about the defense, and rightfully so. You got to worry about the defense. But think about this. What is one of the reasons that they've done that well? And the reason is they have four games played and four wins in the NFC East, where Seattle, yeah, they've played one game in the NFC East and beat Dallas. And so what does that say? Of course, in the one good game against any team that's, you know, even can play football, they were down 25 points against Buffalo and had to rally back. That's that same defense that's ranked that high. And so that's where Seattle starts to make up some ground when they have the three other games in the East. We'll see where it goes with Philadelphia, because Philadelphia still could be dangerous. But, you know, Washington, they're not dangerous. Certainly, they're not dangerous with the Giants. And so, you know, a lot of that success is the fact that they played four games in the NFC East.
I guess if you're in L.A., sorry, Bob, you're going, okay, but the Seahawks played 0-5 Falcons, 2-2 Patriots, 2 and 3. A little better.
Yeah, but again, you're right about the records, but also you're talking about two MVP quarterbacks in Matt Ryan and Cam Newton. You're talking about Kirk Cousins, who's usually a 4,000-yard thrower.
Yeah.
You're also talking about, again, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know. You judge him. But Dak Prescott, even though he's hurt and out for the season, leads the league with almost 1,900 yards passing.
Yeah.
Hey, getting back to Philly for a moment, we had our guy Michael Bradley on yesterday talking about the Eagles, and I asked him about Carson Wentz, who's got 6 touchdowns and 9 interceptions right now with a quarterback rating of 68.5. And, you know, asking him, do you put the blame on him? You put it in. He basically said it was everybody around him, the offensive line and the receivers and all of that. What is your view of what's happening in Philadelphia and with Carson Wentz in particular?
I agree with him 100% because, I mean, take a look. And again, you know, he can maybe take the blame for what's happened to him. But what's happened to him is that, they've had, 4 to 5 offensive line starters go on injured reserve. So they've lost that. They lost Brandon Brooks. They've lost so many guys on the offensive line. And Lane Johnson, as good as he is, maybe the best right tackle in the league, has been off and on playing with a bad ankle. And so, in fact, they were still thinking he might have to need surgery. Fortunately, he doesn't. Then you look at the receiving core. I mean, they've gotten nothing out of DeSean Jackson, who's had injuries. You've got Alshon Jeffries is pretty well done and hasn't done anything. And so what they're relying on is, Greg Ward and, guys that you've never heard of before. I mean, so you put all that together. He has nothing at receiver. Dallas Goedert, one of the two starting tight ends on the team, he's out. And so you're down to tight end, 3 to 4 offensive line starters, you're down to 2 wide receivers, and then you start the season out getting sacked 8 times by the Washington Redskins. And what you can also look at is that, okay, they get sacked the 8 times, and where he might have to take the blame is, it looks like he's starting to get happy feet because he's getting hit so much and there's nobody open. And so I think his mechanics are off. The personality of the offense is not there. They're not getting much on the ground. It's a mess.
John, good stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, we're only about 3 weeks away from Pac-12 football, so we're going to check in with Pac-12 Network's Yogi Roth for the latest news. He's going to join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave White, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free. Listen to the show live. Take us with you wherever you go. You can watch the video stream. You can text in podcast, all of that good stuff available for you with the app if you don't have that. All right, time to talk some Pac-12 football. We're just a couple of weeks away, and who better to discuss Pac-12 football with than Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network, and as we say every time, the president of the Paul Feinbaum Fan Club. Yogi, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm good, man. I'm gearing up for games, right? You guys are listening to some players talk today. I'm doing well amid all the circumstances in the world right now.
Yeah, well, it's always good to talk to you, and before we get into the season and everything, I saw that you had Nick Rolovich and Jimmy Lake on your Pac-12 Perspective podcast. You can tell us, nobody's listening, who was more impressive?
I've known Coach Rolo for pretty much my entire career, so I've known about his personality, and when there was a job that was open at Washington State, the first guy that I thought would be appropriate for it, And I'm happy for that fan base that he's there because he's got a personality. And I think you have to when not only because you follow Mike Leach, but because that place has personality. And Jimmy, I don't know if you saw the beginning of our conversation, but I remember back in the summer how much he loved the Jordan documentary on ESPN and Netflix. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize what an impact it had on him when he broke down game time, just like MJ did. So I led with that. And he just, if you listened or you watched on the internet, his energy jumped right through it. So I think for both of those first-year coaches, man, they're equally impressive. I want to play for either one of them. I don't know if I could play for either roster, but I would definitely – I'd be down with it. So to me, it was a draw. I think it's great for the state of Washington.
Well, Yogi, I'm so excited for Pac-12 football. We're Pac-12 guys out here. We've been watching a little bit of SEC and, You know, and this is kind of for just a general football question, because you see lots of scoring going on in the NFL. I mean, the offenses are ahead of the defenses, and, you know, I'm not sure how much that is, you know, carried over to college football, but it seems to be. And what would be your theory on that? I guess, I mean, they say, like, in the NFL, and this is just, again, general football question, you know, the penalties are down, but, you know, it seems like it's always the other way around in the beginning, that the defenses are ahead of the offenses. Any offer of an explanation for why offenses would be killing defenses right now?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this. I think I have two reasons. One, you know, in these conferences are watching play, they've all, you know, they're lucky if they got through any spring ball. So we start there. Obviously, the summer was, you know, not consistent across the board. And training camp, from everybody I've talked to, it was much different than it had been in the past. It was more of like, let's get through it. Let's get good work in. But you're not seeing the same amount of tackling, the same amount of time, especially these teams that are doing training camp when kids were in school, like the SEC. I mean, think of what we saw last weekend with Ole Miss and Alabama. Like, what? Like, that did not look like what you would imagine, at least from the Alabama side on the defensive end. So I think one is practicing tackling, right? If you go back in the Pac-12, go back to when Lane Kiffin took over at SC and they had the limited roster numbers, if you remember that, and they didn't practice a lot of live in camp. They didn't tackle live, and they were terrible on defense as a tackling team. And when you look back on it, because they didn't do it. So that's one. And then to move it forward, I just think offenses and specifically quarterbacks are just so much more advanced than they've been in years past. And the skill players are so dynamic. So for defenses that maybe have had limited time, or let's just say they even put in their whole system, the receivers are so dynamic. I mean, look at what we saw last weekend or through the first few weeks of the season. Quarterbacks are playing at a crazy level because a lot of them, their offenses are pretty fundamentally simple in my eyes in terms of they could play catch, not always have to play quarterback. So it's half field reads, or I call it pure progression read, which is 1 to 2 to 3 in terms of receivers, and not worried about the defenses. You're just saying, is he covered? Yes, go to number two. If he's not, throw it to him. And I think you combine those two things, and that's a big reason why offenses are having so much success right now.
Well, probably people are going to kill me because we're supposed to be talking Pac-12 football, but I like picking your brain. And I want to ask you about Bob and I were, you know, we like looking up old NFL quarterbacks and their completion percentage. I mean, you know, Stabler, you know, even Joe Montana was like 62%, but now you got quarterbacks at like 70%, you know, 75%, you know, and I think the highest is what, 71 from Breeze for a season, you know, and it just, the refined play quarterback, I guess the science of playing quarterback, but then also maybe it's the penalties or whatever, but I don't want to say it's easy, but it sure is getting a lot easier for quarterbacks at both levels.
Yeah. Well, I think, and it was Drew Brees. I think his stat was 3 years ago. He completed, it was around 70% of his passes were 10 yards or less. You know, most of his completions were checkdowns. And you start hammering that and showing those stats to your players in high school and, of course, college. And guys, like, make a lot of sense of that. Like, okay, how can I go make, like, $100 million? I just complete the ball. And I think the majority of coordinators I talk to, a lot of their philosophy is no unforced errors. Let's just not hurt ourselves. Defenses, specifically in college, this is my theory, is that there's not enough time in the week to prepare. So most of the time, if you're going to say spot drop in zone coverage, you have a spot to go to, but you might be off by a half a yard, maybe a yard. And that's why quarterbacks can complete in so many balls in between the hashes, in my opinion, in college football. I mean, if it's me and I'm calling games kind of in my head as I'm watching them, I would work in the middle of the field so often in games because you're just seeing, you know, gaping holes. So I'm with you on that. I also think the amount of chances being taken aren't as dramatic, right? It's not like we're seeing, the offenses I grew up with. There's not a lot of West Coast offenses, right? You're going to see a little bit, I think, in Seattle this year with UW, but you're not seeing a lot of it in college or the NFL in terms of pure drop back, get rid of the ball to create some play action passes, right? You see with the Niners, you see with the Rams, you see it a few teams in the NFL. I mean, I haven't watched every game in college, but I haven't seen a lot of pure drop back. You know, in my Saturdays here at home in L.A. And I think we'll see a couple in the Pac-12 this year, but I think that's a big reason why the percentages are up. Quarterbacks can make spot throws. And offenses are much more simplistic in terms of getting it out, taking advantage of a lot of space. And to what we talked about on defense is that we've seen, I don't know the stat, but I bet there's a higher percentage this year of busts regarding touchdowns on the defensive side than guys just earning it like they had in the past.
Hey, Yogi, before we let you go, let me bring you back to the Washington schools quickly. Just give me your expectations for them. I know our other co-host who's not here today, a big Cougar fan, saw a projection of a 2-win season, and he was really upset about that projection for the Cougs. What do you expect in terms of wins for the Cougs and the Dogs, and do you expect is Oregon the class of the Pac-12, or who do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I voted in the media poll for the first time this year, and I picked Oregon and SC respectively. But you look at Washington, if we start with them, obviously a really challenging game off the bat against a quarterback in Chase Garbers, who is the winningest quarterback coming back in this conference. Like, who would have thought that? Like, if you asked people that question, most probably wouldn't have guessed Cal's starting quarterback. But I think they're set up to, you know, if they can get that one, can they beat Oregon State? Can they beat Arizona? And then playing their best football down the stretch? Like, you double scare some people in my eyes because they're as athletic as you're going to find on the defensive side. Tremendous depth. A lot of players, especially in the front seven, that nobody really knows about that I'm really excited to watch play. And then for the Cougs, I think for them, the pandemic and the Carroll rules, right, when it expanded to having, you know, a much more time with players, which is kind of an off-season thing. You usually get a few hours per week, but it got expanded once the pandemic hit. They benefited greatly from that in my eyes because of their offense, right? The run and shoot, I have my playbook from when I played in college. We ran the run and shoot. It's my favorite offense in the country, but you need time. You need reps. And I think they really made up ground with those 12 hours, receivers, quarterbacks, being able to throw with each other, being able to work out. So I think they'll be further along than people think. And I think this year they'll be in a lot of ball games. I think their personnel is better than people think. You could argue they have the best playmaker as a running back in terms of catching out of the backfield and, of course, running the football. And nobody's going to have any scouting report on this offense coming in. And I think it'll surprise some people. So will they win 2 games? Maybe. I don't think they'll run the table, but I don't see the Cougs getting rolled, and neither do I see UW. I think the North is as competitive as we've seen. This is my 20th year in college football, I think 15th in the Pac-12 or Pac-10. I think it's going to be the most competitive in that division as I've ever seen.
Good stuff. Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network has been our guest. Yogi, thanks so much, man. We love talking to you. We always appreciate you taking time for us, and we hopefully will be talking again soon.
Let's go, man. Can't wait.
Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Yogi.
There you go. There's Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network. Good stuff from him. Coming up, Jose Altuve has the yips, and the Titans and Adam Gase don't want to take the accountability for their mistakes. We'll hear these stories when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
They've got the shift on against him as he swings and pulls a ground ball to Altuve, who bounces a throw to second past Correa into left field. And another throwing error on Jose Altuve, this time as he tried to pivot and just forced the lead runner at second base.
And with that throw, Dan, we can say it, Houston, we have a problem.
Yes, they do. And it's delightful. Third error of the postseason for Altuve. Third in as many days. He had 2-1 game and then that one last night, and Dusty Baker spoke it into existence. I hope he doesn't have the yips. Those things can they can compound. They can multiply, if you will, and saw that. So I think it's official. He's got the yips. Probably at this point praying the ball doesn't get hit to him. Just don't hit it to me.
It's pretty fascinating when you think about this. I mean, this is his 10th year in baseball, and that's like the most fundamental thing that you can do, you know. And so talk about getting in his head. And I hate to pile on. Dan McGuire is one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Former Seahawks quarterback.
Yeah, the Seahawks quarterback. And, you know, I just remember watching him, like, he wouldn't be able to complete, like, a flat little swing pass, You know, it's just something that's just automatic as a quarterback that you do. And, you know, it just got in his head. And he just wasn't able to make that. So you see that happen to people. And I went through a streak where, you know, the other day we were talking about the book that Fred Moody wrote when I did Storytime, the guy that followed us around the entire. Yeah, I had like a string of like four or five games where I was missing tackles. And then it became a thing. Like at first it was like, oh man, I can't miss anymore. And then I'd miss another one. And then all of a sudden it's like it gets in your head. And but I mean, this guy's an all-star. So I guess, you know, nobody is, you know, devoid of having this kind of a problem. I mean, once it gets in there, I don't know. Do you think Altuve even heard that Dusty Baker said that? I mean, sometimes players don't listen. I mean, most
probably if he didn't hear it, somebody brought it to his attention. You know how it is with the guys around him, and
somebody might put it on Twitter.
I'm certain he was aware of what was said, and it happened to Knobloch, who was an all-star. It happened to Joey Cora. It happened to Steve Sachs, who is now being if you're Steve Sachs, you're not being contacted to talk about being a rookie of the year or five-time all-star or World Series champ. They're talking to you about, oh yeah, you famously had the yips, and he's got comments here saying, I can feel for Jose. There's nothing worse in the world. It's the most lonely place to be. It's embarrassing. It's just awful. I hope he can grasp this as soon as possible because this thing is very simple. It's right in front of him. And so many people are going to say, oh, Jose, you have a mental block. He doesn't. He has a temporary loss of confidence. And, you know, he goes on to talk about it. But, yeah, Sachs, former rookie of the year, five-time All-Star, two-time World Series champ, and suffered through the yips in the 80s. He led the majors with 30 errors in 1983, still a record for a second baseman. Unbelievable.
The Tennessee Titans are having trouble understanding why everyone might be frustrated with them and took on an us-against-the-world mentality after their win last night. Here's tackle Taylor Lewan.
They hate it. They were angry at us. They thought we did everything wrong. Don't put us in adversity. Scratch all day, match all night.
And this is what quarterback Ryan Tannehill had to say post-game.
We said a lot of things throughout the past couple of weeks, and things are being said, and personal things that were said against our team, our guys, really felt uncalled for. So, yeah, we were a little ticked off about how we've been treated, how we've been looked at over the past couple of weeks, and we really just stuck together through that process and believed in each other and wanted to come out and play our game and play how we believe in each other and knew we could do. We did that.
I'm glad they're sticking together and they're wrong decision-making and feeling indignant. It's like the Astros. Hey, we screwed up. People criticized us. How dare they? We'll show them.
It's
tone deaf. It's tone deaf.
It worked for them.
It's exactly the same as the Astros' attitude where they get caught doing something wrong and they feel put upon. they screwed up. Again, it doesn't matter which side of this you're on, whether you believe in it's a hoax, it's not a hoax, I like masks, I don't care, I hate masks, whatever it is. These are the rules by which you are employed and are allowed to play this game. And everybody's adhering and being forced to adhere to these protocols and rules, and you chose to deliberately break those protocols. You were wrong. Period. End of story, as Dave says. So this indignant nature of, oh, they were mad at us, and we were sort of ticked off about that.
This one was tailor-made for Bob, wasn't it, Maura?
So misplaced.
Yeah, well, and then the other thing that Maura writes here, you know, is that you know, you'd think it'd be a little bit more unfair what's happening to everybody else because, you know, the Bills had to prepare for the possibility of playing either the Chiefs or the Titans.
Yeah.
You know, two really good teams.
Yeah, and what's that film study like?
Depending on, you know, whether the Titans got their outbreak under control is what's unfair, is her point, which I think is right. So, yeah, I think that they should put a lid on that. Taylor Lewan is one of those guys. He's outspoken and everything, but yeah, probably not. You inconvenienced a couple of other teams and really put it at risk for the entire NFL by doing what you did. So yeah, that part of it, and not like they did anything that, you know, I mean, look, not sure how the original outbreak came and all that. What, maybe they were following the rules, but then when they went and had the workout, you know, that's stupid. I mean, if you're another team, you're sitting there going, man, can you imagine? And, you know, it's funny. We were kind of talking about this, like the mask thing and everything. My biggest concern is that I would give it to someone.
Yeah.
You know, I think I probably survive if I contracted it, but I would feel terrible.
Oh.
I would feel terrible if I was the one that was the, you know, the spreader. And so that, yeah, and that's the part that they're missing.
And again, it doesn't fall into the camp of I believe it's serious, I don't believe it's serious, I hate masks, I support masks. That's all irrelevant. These are the rules that are in place for your employer, from your employer. We've got rules here we've got to follow, and it really doesn't matter how we feel about it. If you want to work here, this is what you have to do. And if you want to play football in this pandemic situation, here's what you need to do. And they intentionally and knowingly went against it. And then act like, oh, everybody was mad at us, and that kind of ticked us off. Well, whatever.
Do you think he can still be a productive back in the league?
I'm sure he'll get an opportunity somewhere else, and we'll see what happens.
Do you agree with the perception that you misused him?
It's irrelevant at this point.
Yeah, but Adam, when a team makes a free agent investment that large and it ends before two seasons, I think the fans are interested in knowing why it didn't work out with a player of that stature.
Yeah, it didn't work out. It didn't work out, and we're going to focus on this game right now.
It's Adam Gase really not wanting to discuss Le'Veon Bell at all. Keeping his feet put to the fire, so to speak, there by the reporters asking about Le'Veon Bell and that situation, and he really had little to say about it. I did enjoy Bruce Irvin on Twitter last night, though.
What was he saying?
He was having Irvin's a good time hilarious. With it. Yeah, he said Le'Veon hated on Jamal Adams for leaving the Jets, and now he's gone. Mm-hmm. You know? So he was getting a kick out of that, and he's funny on Twitter, man.
The way he talks too, man. When he was mic'd up, unfortunately, it was the game that he got hurt against the Patriots. Yeah. But he was yelling at Cam Newton. You know, I know, because they played together in Carolina. He's like, I know you don't like it there. And then you could hear Cam Newton go, yes, I do. I love my guys. He's like, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
And then they're just going back and forth. I like that he has a lot of little kid in him. But who was the clown that said Le'Veon Bell should come to Seattle?
Bill Barnwell.
Barnwell.
Well, he was saying it's one of the he listed, I don't know how many teams, like five, six different teams that he thought could be potential landing spots.
Yeah.
And somehow, some way, Seattle was one of them. I'm like, you're out of your mind, man.
Right. But, Bruce Irvin, I might have to start following him on Twitter, even though I'm not on Twitter. Just because.
Just check in on him. He's pretty hilarious. Funny. He's funny. All right, coming up, it's time for a show favorite, a man who always makes us laugh, and in particular, Dave Wyman. He laughs just hearing the name. Adam, see? I didn't even say it yet.
It's like Jim with the hang-up from
from El Hombre.
El Hombre. Like, he knows it's going to happen every time.
Yeah, comedian Adam Ray will join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.